Want to immerse yourself in sport and the stories of athletes from across the Pacific? Well, join me, Sam Wykes, alongside some of the most talented journalists and sports commentators from across the region for Fresh Off the Field. Each week, we'll also bring you interviews with Pacific athletes leaving their mark on the international stage and those aspiring to do the same. From cricket to netball, athletics to football, and everything in between. Listen to Fresh Off the Field on your favorite podcast app.
This is an ABC podcast.
Kam na Māori, kia ora nā, alii, and good fella morning. This is Pacific Beat on ABC Radio Australia. I'm your host, Aggie Dubois, and today on the show, Fiji's Defence Minister disappointed at China's missile test into the Pacific.
You know, China is a big power. We're all in a small, tiny nation. If we all have respect for each other and in our quest for peace, I'm sure, you know, incidents just like this can be avoided.
And we hope to speak to one of our Pacific elders to get their reaction to this. Plus, West Papua independence leader speaks out against the killing of an American pilot.
I regret, and it shouldn't happen, you know, in the future, because we're not enemy with the international friends like pilot or tourist or anybody.
And a new netball competition will be testing not just the physical, but the spirit too.
We draw our strength and our identity from our culture and our communities and what that means for each of you, wherever you're from.
Stay tuned for those stories and more. We'd like to acknowledge that our show comes to you from the lands of the Bunurong and Wurundjeri peoples of the Kulin Nation. I say kam na Māori aki. Thank you for tuning into Pacific Beat, yours in the Pacific. We begin with Fiji's Defence Minister, who says he was disappointed Beijing proceeded with a missile test after he warned the Chinese embassy in Suva against it. A long-range missile test equipped with a dummy warhead was launched by China from a submarine on Monday, landing near the exclusive economic zones of Nauru and Tuvalu. The launch came just hours after Australia and Fiji Prime Ministers signed the historic Vuvale Union and Ocean of Peace Alliance treaties. A defence pact backed by more than $1 billion in Australian investment over a decade and promises major benefits for Fiji's security sector. Lithia Movono reports from Suva.
When Defence Minister Pio Tukunduandua learned that a Chinese naval task group was heading south towards the Pacific, he asked for an explanation.
I had a discussion with the Chinese defense advisors at the Chinese embassy, just noting to them, you know, what is the clarity about the naval task group that was coming down south. And I said, see, we would be very concerned if they were going to be firing any missiles whilst they are around in our region.
No explanation was given, but a missile came down on Monday in seas near Nauru, on the very day Fiji signed its first ever defence alliance, and with a Chinese missile tracking vessel sitting in Suva's harbour. The minister was surprised and disappointed. He won't say the test was a reaction to the treaties, but...
With the ship here and the missile testing and all that, it's a strange coincidence, really.
He says China was within its rights in international waters, and Beijing insists the test wasn't aimed at anyone. But the minister is blunt about what it does to the relationship.
Missile testing doesn't really augur much for respect and trust, really, in my view. But, you know, we recognize, you know, China is a big power. We're all in small, tiny nation. But I think if we all have respect for each other and in our quest for peace, I'm sure, you know, incidents like this can be avoided.
It's a sentiment echoed by Solomon Islands Prime Minister Matthew Wale, who says the Pacific does not want to see missiles tested in the region.
China is a good friend of Solomon Islands, but this is not something a friend does. This is not good in our region.
It's under that shadow that the two treaties now head to the parliaments in Suva and Canberra for ratification. And already, Fiji's civil society is asking who was in the room when they were negotiated. Vani Vatanasinghe heads the Fiji Council of Social Services, the country's largest umbrella body for civil society organizations. She says nobody consulted them, and the real test isn't in the treaty text.
So for us, the Ocean of Peace as a strategy or as a concept should be first and foremost about communities. I am wary that strategy or the pact that has been signed will primarily focus on military alliances. You know, it must make sense at the kitchen table for Fijian communities.
And she has a warning of her own for both governments as ratification begins.
It does sound quite secretive. We cannot afford to be secretive. For both sides of the agreement, they need to be transparent about what this means for citizens.
Where the treaties could bite first is the fight against drugs. Fiji has become a transshipment hub for narcotics crossing the Pacific. Security expert Jose Sousa Santos, who specializes in transnational crime, says the deal will make a huge difference, but he still has questions.
The treaty also refers to the integration of law enforcement, border and defense, which, in the context of transnational crime, implies that there will be greater two-way sharing of intelligence and coordination of counter-TNOC operations. The question now is, how do you operationalize such a broad and far-reaching mandate?
That question was put to Defense Minister Pio Tikondondua, who said the treaty opens up access Fiji never had before. But he insists some benefits aren't waiting for Parliament.
In terms of platforms, communications equipment, we're talking about intelligence sharing. These are the big things that could not be acquired under the defense cooperation program of the past. We talked about unmanned watercraft, UAV, you know, the ability to be able to see at night, and for the benefit of the police, particularly when we're dealing with people who bring drugs, you know, through our maritime corridors.
And that there is Fiji's Defence Minister ending that report from Lethe Mavono in Suva. Meanwhile, the last time China tested an intercontinental ballistic missile was in 2024. But this time around, there's been pushback from Pacific Island leaders, with Solomon Islands Prime Minister Matthew Wiley and Papua New Guinea Prime Minister James Marape condemning the test. Oliver Nobendal is a research fellow and the project director of the Australia PNG Network at the Lowy Institute. He told ABC's Nick Sass that there was a uniform reaction from Pacific leaders, and this could harm China's relations with some Pacific nations in the long term.
The first ones to come out with the reaction, as would be expected, was Australia and New Zealand as well. I think Minister Peters in New Zealand was the first one to say that they were given, you know, the equivalent of 2 hours of notice from when the missile test would take off to when it actually happened. Now, the Pacific leaders as well were quite slow to sort of reprimand China for this missile test. And that was to be expected as well. Usually the Pacific leaders have been trying to play sort of the middle ground and be sort of a good partner to both China and Australia. But what is sort of most surprising is that the hard language that's being shown now today, almost 24 hours after the missile launch, missile test story being conducted, we see that Prime Minister Wale was quite strong and in his position as chair of the Pacific Islands Forum as well, has condemned the missile test and says that this is not what a friend of the Pacific does. Prime Minister Marape as well has come out saying that missiles shouldn't be shot into the Pacific Ocean. So Prime Minister Marape, as is quite common from him, has sort of balanced it out and said this is not only directed at China, but to all other major powers that have that capability as well. So it's a uniformed position between all these Pacific leaders as well, in that there is a disagreement that this missile test was conducted, and they definitely would not want to see any more of that moving forward.
So you talked about Solomon Islands Prime Minister Matthew Wiley said, as you said, China is a good friend of the Solomon Islands, but this is not something a friend does. So do you think this will make a long-standing impact on China-Solomon's relations in the future?
I think so. And I think the seed was initially planted by Prime Minister Wale as well. His first trip when he came into office was to come to Australia, and he talked about resetting that relationship with Australia and even proposing the Regional Security Treaty, which we're not too sure what it would look like yet, but he really is asking for Australia to champion that. Now, that sort of initial desire for that reset of that relationship was done. And I think this only just adds the ammunition to the case that's being made, not only by Prime Minister Wale, but also with Albanese's visit and signing of the Ocean of Peace Alliance. This is a prime example for Prime Minister Albanese to point to now and say that this is exactly what we are trying to avoid by building these sort of security partnerships and ensuring that there's stability in the region as well.
Yeah, have you been surprised by some of the moves and public statements by Mr. Wiley? It seems like some commentators weren't expecting him to kind of do, I guess, a 180 on what he's done in terms of Solomon Islands' relationship with China since he's been elected as leader.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, describing it as a 180 is quite accurate. Nobody thought that he'd have this vigor about him about resetting the relationship. I think it's interesting that today, Prime Minister Albanese and Prime Minister Wale are meeting in the place where the secret security pact in 2022 was signed, which really changed the architecture of Australia's engagement into the Pacific. But now the tone is so different. It's talking about the partnership and bolstering the cooperation together. So it's a complete, it is a complete 180, and it's picking up momentum going in the opposite direction. What's also quite surprising as well is that when Prime Minister Wale had come into office, when he had given his first press conference, the first thing that he said was a priority for him was managing the coalition as well and ensuring that they could make it to the next elections. Usually, you would find that the position on foreign policy by Pacific leaders is quite indicative of the makeup and where they lie in terms of supporting the West or supporting partnerships with China. So, for instance, if a foreign leader comes out with a balanced foreign policy approach towards China as well as towards the West, you can assume that the coalition is made up of both China sympathizers as well as sympathizers towards the West as well. While Matthew Wale said that, you know, he was trying to manage the coalition, but he is going sort of full steam ahead in building that partnership with traditional allies as well, we can assume that the coalition that he's managing is largely a pro sort of Western traditional partner makeup.
What about the rest of the Pacific? It came in interesting timing, symbolically, I guess, on the back of the Nakamal agreement, the Vivali agreement with Fiji, just on the same day. Do you think this move by China will have broader impacts on the relations with other Pacific nations?
It's going to hurt sort of its reputational damage. And, you know, the unfortunate thing is that China says that this was planned weeks in advance. However, the date of which the missile launch actually happened coincides with the signing, which really is bad for the optics for China. It makes it look as they are reactionary or that they're lacking a self-control. They could have either delayed it by a few days so that it clears the visit that Albanese is doing, or even have brought it forward as well. And I think what's key now, what Prime Minister Albanese can do is point to this and tell the other Pacific countries as well, like, this is the other security partner or the security alternative that is facing Pacific Island countries as well. So I think it will hurt them a little bit unless they answer for why this missile launch was done and there's a really good justification for it. I mean, last year's Pacific Islands Forum, they talk about the Oceans of Peace, and this directly contravenes that. It's going to be sort of an uphill battle for them. And I think Australia is really up to the challenge now to actually offer the support in the effect that there is sort of an absence of Chinese agreements or support being given to these Pacific Island countries.
And that there is Oliver Nobendal, Research Fellow and the Project Director of the Australia-Papua New Guinea Network at the Lowy Institute. And he was speaking there to ABC's Nick Sass.
State of Origin.
State of Origin, we love you.
Hear it all on ABC Radio Australia. Don't miss a minute of the fiercest rivalry in rugby league.
You will not see better than that.
Where every tackle matters.
Oh, what a tackle! Bang!
And history is made.
What a thrilling try.
The men's State of Origin. Tonight from 7 p.m. PNG time.
He's over! That is freakish!
On ABC Radio Australia. Your home of rugby league in the Pacific.
In the Fale is a music show on ABC Radio Australia, hosted by me, Paola Tukefu. I'll be spinning my favourite tunes from dancehall to disco, calypso to country, reggae to roots, and hip-hop to house music, from across the era to keep the kids and the aunties happy. If it has a pumping groove, I'll be bringing it to you to bump you into the weekend.
In the Fale, Friday afternoons at 3 PNG time on ABC Radio Australia.
Kamna Moriaki, thank you for joining me on Pacific Beat. For more on the Pacific region's reaction to the China ballistic missile test, we are joined by Anote Tong, former Kiribati President and member of the Pacific Elders of Voice. With that, I say Maori, Mr. Tong, thank you for speaking to us this morning.
Maori, and thank you for having me, giving me the opportunity to share our story.
Absolutely. Well, Mr. Tong, I have to ask, what was your reaction to the news that China had fired a ballistic test missile pretty much within the capacity to carry a nuclear warhead into the Pacific?
Well, it's a very clear message, and I think the message is clearly heard by the Pacific region as a whole. I don't think it didn't seem necessary to demonstrate one's capability. There's no question that China has the capability. And the question is, why did it need to be demonstrated at this point in time? But of course, no doubt this might be related to recent events in the region.
Yes. Do you think this was then that reaction to Australia signing a new security treaty with Fiji?
Yeah, I'm sure that is the case. It's pretty clear. But it's also related to the declining foothold that China seems to be losing in the Pacific. I think what happened recently with Solomon Islands, resetting its relationship with Australia, and also the treaty that was also signed with Vanuatu. And clearly, this is a message that is being sent, whether it was being sent to Kiribati, not to do the same thing that Solomon has done, that Fiji has done. These are the questions, and I think we have to try to interpret the message that is being sent.
Mm. Well, when you talk about messages, I understand that, you know, there was the signing of the new Ocean of Peace Alliance with Australia. Do you then think that this action will deter other Pacific countries maybe from signing up to this alliance?
Well, if that is the intention, I don't think it's nobody wants to be intimidated, and nobody wants to admit being intimidated. I think it's, you know, as Pacific people, we have our pride and dignity. We don't want to be cowed. We don't want to be intimidated into doing things that we believe we need to do for our people. And so that message, I don't think it conveys the message. I think it conveys one message, which is possibly unintended. And this is that it may be dangerous to have relations with certain partners, because they react very dangerously.
Mm. Yes, and you had said this looks like maybe a declining foothold in the Pacific for China. So I want to go towards the fact that, you know, you're a member of the Pacific Elders. Your organization itself has raised concerns about Australia's new Vulvalu Treaty and even this Ocean Alliance. I would like to know, what is your biggest worry about these security treaties then?
You know, I think our, you know, we want to, I think the statement that's been brought out by the Pacific Elders' voice is that we want this region, the Pacific region, as a region of peace. We want to live our lives peacefully. I think we've had our share of trouble in the past with our uninvited participation in the Second World War. What happened before that was the constant kidnapping of our people in the very early parts of the 19th century. And, of course, the nuclear tests that were carried out in quite a number of the Pacific Island countries, including Kiribati and close by the Marshall Islands. And so we don't want that to happen again. We want to be able to have the ability to exercise our rights as sovereign states, to live a dignified life peacefully.
Mm. Now, the statement that I saw says the Pacific Island Forum should be the key institution looking after the region's security. Are you then saying that these alliances and treaties somehow undermining regionalism instead of strengthening it? And if so, how?
I think we have to examine these treaties separately. Of course, they are bilateral. Quite a number of them are bilateral treaties. But I think it is important to begin to think in terms of a region-wide a treaty whereby all countries are participants. We are aligned in the way we think. We are aligned in the way we interact with our partners. And I think that is important, because each country on its own really does not have the weight to influence any country. We don't have the power, the military might, or the economic power to be able to influence countries, the superpowers, including Australia. And so I think we need to start thinking in terms of the collective rather than the individual countries.
But Mr. Tong, some would argue that the fact China is testing its missiles in the Pacific actually somehow signals the need for such a treaty.
No, I think an example, we mustn't we must also interpret what China has recently done. Mm. I think I really don't believe that China would have be stupid enough, any leader in China would be stupid enough to blow any one of the Pacific countries out of existence. It doesn't serve any purpose. We are no threat. I think all it would do is question the credibility of a superpower like China, or even whatever country that might engage in such an act.
Now, I know the statement also says that an ocean of peace cannot be built on a security agenda. Mr. Tong, then what then would be the way forward?
I think as a region, we have always put climate change as an issue that threatening the greatest security issue, threatening our region. It has the capacity and the potential to really threaten the survival of a number of our countries. And we need to be acting in those. I think to engage in the military component of the security component is something that, because not all of our countries have militaries. And so any relationship which involves the military cannot cover all of the Pacific Island countries because we have different levels of militarization. And so we need to be able to have an arrangement whereby we're all participants equally.
I do want to quickly ask, Mr. Tong, before we wrap up, are we in a place where we are overreacting too much to what had happened recently, or has this been a necessary reaction or a reason to be a little bit, you know, wary of what China's intentions are?
I think we must react. I think, as I understand, the missile came into our part of the world. We should respond. You know, we must ask clarification. Why is it necessary that you feel you must do this? Do we pose any danger to you, or is it a game that you are playing? And if it's a game, what is the game? Are we part of it, or are we simply the pawns that would be sacrificed in the process of the game being played out? And I think, we must have faith in the international rules order. We must believe that the international rules continue to apply and do exist.
Yeah, definitely a lot to still unpack with this conversation, Mr. Tong, but we really do appreciate you coming on the show this morning.
Thank you. Thank you for having me this morning.
No worries. That is Anote Tong, former Kiribati president and member of the Pacific Elders Voice here on Pacific Beat. Well, continuing with our coverage of China's missile test into the Pacific, Papua New Guinea's opposition leader has criticised Prime Minister James Marape's response to China's recent ballistic missile test in the Pacific, calling it too soft. After the test, Mr. Marape made what he described as a respectful but firm appeal for China and all military powers not to carry out any more missile tests in the Pacific waters. But opposition leader James Nomane says that response did not go far enough, arguing the launch violated the spirit of the South Pacific nuclear-free zone established under the Treaty of Rarotonga. Mr. Nomane spoke with Natasha Emick.
China firing a ballistic missile was quite unexpected. And to be frank, it is concerning because when we look at the smaller Pacific Island states of Micronesia, Nauru, Kiribati, Tuvalu, they were just caught off guard by what happened. And on behalf of the opposition, we firmly believe that it's a breach of the Treaty of Rarotonga. And China signed the protocols in 1987 after the Treaty of Rarotonga was established in 1986. So we expect they have to take it very serious that this is a nuclear-free zone. And we want the Pacific to be peaceful. From the very outset, we never asked for conflict. And then that resulted in a lot of devastation to our environment, the pollution of our waters. And we don't want a repeat of this sort of military escalation and conflict and testing in the Pacific, because that's not what the Pacific stands for.
And after that recent missile test, Mr. Marape did call on China and all other military powers not to carry out any more missile tests in the Pacific waters. He described it as a respectful but firm appeal. I guess, what did you make of that response? Did it strike the right balance, or do you think PNG should have taken a stronger position?
The Prime Minister did issue a very watered-down diplomatic response, and I thought it was just really uncalled for him to mention his tenure in the Pacific with respect to the severity of the situation in China breaching the Treaty of Rarotonga. The Prime Minister should have echoed the sentiments of our neighbours in New Zealand and Australia. To call out China for, you know, escalating its military activities in the area. And, you know, we're not in conflict and we're not the enemy and there's no war. So we don't expect any sort of military activity, escalation, testing or buildup in the Pacific. So I thought it was a very diplomatic and soft statement by the Prime Minister.
This test came just hours after Fiji and Australia signed their new defence treaty. And when PNG signed its own defence treaty with Australia last year, China came out and publicly warned PNG about that deal. Are you concerned about tensions escalating across the Pacific at the moment?
Yes, I think it's very important in engaging with our big bilateral partners, including Australia, China, the United States, the United Kingdom, France. Papua New Guinea has to remain agnostic. It has to continue to defend its sovereignty, and it has to continue to push a pro-peace position for the Pacific. And this is something that all our bilateral partners have to respect. So it is a concern when we do not take enough time to review the strategic implications of arrangements between bilateral partners.
Were you happy with the review process for the Puk Puk Treaty?
No, we thought the Puk Puk Treaty was done in haste. We got strong-armed into it because Australia dangled the NRL carrot. We've opposed it in Parliament, and we were against the treaty from the outset because of the way in which the government handled it.
Despite signing that treaty, Prime Minister James Marape said PNG would still likely stay out of any future conflict between Australia and China. Realistically, though, do you think that's possible?
Well, because of the location, the geographic location of the country, it's just like in World War II, you know, we didn't have a choice. We just got thrown into a conflict whether we liked it or not. In the very, very unlikely event of a conflict down the line, if there's any, you know, military posturing or this sort of aggression takes place, Papua New Guinea will definitely have no choice because of the geographic location that we hold in the Pacific.
And that there is PNG opposition leader James Namani speaking to our reporter Natasha Emick. All right, just 3 months after Typhoon Sinlaku tore through the Northern Marianas, leaving a trail of damage to homes with power outages, widespread flooding, and also a death toll of 17. Communities are once again picking up the pieces after another devastating Category 5 storm, Super Typhoon Bavi, hit on Monday. Now, for the latest update, we're joined by Tinian resident Deborah Fleming. With that, I say good morning, Deborah.
Half a day. Good morning.
Yes, thank you for joining us. Look, firstly, I have to ask, how are you coping and how is the community doing there?
I am coping. The community, a lot of them are just so sad. They just, you know what, settled in to the new roof that the FEMA provided with the Air Force or the military, you know, put them up, and they just moved into their homes and their shelters, collected what they could from the destruction of Sinlaku. And then in less than 3 months, they had to go back to shelters. And it, their homes looked like it was an implode, you know? Mm. The roof just came apart. And a lot of homes were like that. Some people were still living in tents because they were not ready, you know, to finish their roofing. And the only things that survived are buildings that are solid concrete. But even those had, you know, projectiles crashing through their windows. It was a very, very wet typhoon.
Yeah.
And the other thing that is so concerning to me after Sinlaku was the wildlife, the bees. There was just no flowers. The only green left are just grass on the ground, birds. And now with Bavi, there's not a single coconut left on the trees to be able to cut them open and just, you know, put them up in the trees so the birds can eat. It's really sad. Mm. It's really, really sad. And Rhoda, I just saw pictures of when Bavi hit. You know, the palm trees were nearly the tops of them were nearly touching the ground. I mean, they got it really, really bad. I liken it to our Typhoon Yutu in 2018. But you know, it's happening more frequent now and more fierce.
Yeah.
So it has to be caused by something. I know we're in the El Nino period, and more frequent and more fierce storms are expected. But in all my life, I have never seen this kind of destruction. Wet and fierce wind and the noise, oh my God, really scary. Really, really scary.
Yeah, and I can hear it in your voice, Deborah, and I do really appreciate you sharing what is currently happening there on the ground, especially in Tinian, because I know that's your place of residence. Can I just ask then, what immediate assistance is needed right now then?
Okay, lights, solar lights, batteries. The entire CNMI was out of D-size batteries, which a lot of, you know, old people like myself, we still have our old flashlights that use D batteries. Fans from 2018 that we received from donations use a lot of size D batteries. Solar lights are really helpful because even on a very cloudy day, they still can charge. After Sinlaku, you know, the diaspora throughout the world, donations, shipping companies brought them into the island, containers full, and there was a lot of distribution for water and all sorts of food, canned foods, noodles, rice, so many things. The thing that we miss the most is green vegetables. Nothing left. But as of a week ago, before the typhoon, we started seeing, you know, from our garden, started, you know, having vegetables again, and then those are all wiped out again. What else is needed? There are so many organizations that have been so giving, and all of that has been distributed. But Tinian itself has a serious situation of fuel supply. Petrol is what it's called, I believe, in your area. Gasoline. We line up for hours. It's limited because the super tanker won't be able to come into Tinian to deliver bulk fuel until July.
Wow.
So that too is very limited. And a lot of our little generators run on petrol. And you line up for hours. I lined up 3 hours, filled up my vehicle and what little bit of gasoline containers. That's another thing we don't have on the island is gasoline containers because the fuel, there's only one gas station on the island operational. And so everything is limited. Now, because of the situation with the seaport and the tanker not being able to come in, now it's limited to just 10 gallons per day.
Wow.
And that's with the human aspect. But the other thing is the wildlife. There is nothing left. And then we have the salt spray. So when you look up in the mountains, it looks like it's raining up there because it appears foggy. But that's all salt air being blown in by the wind. The whole island, the small islands, the whole island is covered with it. And then they'll burn because of the salt air. And they will be totally denuded. Not a single green leaf will be on any plant.
So with that, Deborah, things like the salt spray, what advice has come then from authorities in terms of safety and keeping you guys, you know, away from that type of stuff happening?
I think that it's healthy for humans. It's just very, it burns plants that we need and that the birds need. You know, there is not a single shade anywhere other than on the side of houses that are still standing that you can lean on to get any kind of shade outside. And so therefore, with all those combination, it's hot. It's super hot and still humid. But having lived here all my life, I understand that. So you need to take refuge, you know, collect rainwater and rinse off often. And the island got cleaned up, thank God. Companies were brought in to take the debris off island. So the island looks really clean, but now new debris, but not as much because there's not as much trees left behind for the storm to drop on the ground. Roof tins, wood, you can see them on the roadways, but people are resilient. They know what they need to do and start clearing up and cleaning. Because then you have a profusion of mosquitoes too.
Yes.
That's nasty.
From the sounds of everything, Typhoon Bavi has obviously impacted the recovery efforts from original typhoons in Lāku. What impacts then, Deborah, are you thinking this will have on people's mental health and well-being?
That's the other thing. You know, learning that another storm was coming, the direction that it was unknown until it fully, formed before we knew where it's perfectly human to feel relief, even though you know that it's going directly to your neighbor's island. You know, a remote island road is quite remote. And unlike Tinian, where we have all this military development because of the tension in the region, we have help. They don't have help. They're so remote. But a lot of oceaneers are volunteering their little boats to bring relief to Rota. That's the other issue with Rota. It really never had a seaport like Tinian does because Tinian seaport was built in 1944. And so it was, a seaport that received huge military ships. And those been a little over 80 years, it has lasted somewhat. It needs to be rebuilt. The breakwater is all broken from typhoons and just, storms and the lack of resources to do any kind of repair by the municipality. But Rota didn't have that. So it's really difficult to bring things into Rota as swiftly as you can in Tinian.
Yeah.
Water. They will need water.
Of course.
That's what we had. Within days, Tinian had the city water running. Thanks God for that, And Guam had been amazing in sending their power line people to Tinian. Tinian's about maybe 60% hooked up. I still don't have power since Sinlaku. And then this came and what telephone pole and bits of, what they prepared to set us up got blown off.
Really hoping, Deborah, that the necessary help does come in to help you guys out there. And look, we are sending our love, our prayers to you and hope that you are looking after yourself and that, of course, the residents there of Tinian and even Rota are going to be okay. So, look, we just want to say thank you very much for coming on the show and sharing today.
Thank you too. We need to share what we, we're one world. The ocean connects us. It's only one world. And I appreciate your interest in trying to put our situation out. Thank you.
No worries. You take care. That is Deborah Fleming, a resident on the island of Tinian, which was hit by Super Typhoon Bavi.
Do you want to know how to take better care of yourself, whether it's your body or your mind? Pacific Pulse on ABC Radio Australia has the answers. Pacific Pulse brings together experts, movers and shakers, and the wise aunties and uncles from across the Pacific to break down our health challenges, from how we care for our bodies to the health impacts of culture and island living. Join host Melissa Macon for Pacific Pulse Wednesdays at 6 p.m. PNG time on ABC Radio Australia or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Pacific Beat. It is that time we head around the region to get the latest headlines brought to you by our producer, Whenau Whanua, who's in the studio with me this morning. Fefe.
Sorry, I'm fine. Thank you.
Thank you for joining me. Yes, as always, before we head into the headlines, you've got to give us an update on the latest results from the FIFA World Cup.
Colombia is currently playing Switzerland. It's 0-0. Interesting game. Mm-hmm. A few hours ago, Argentina defeated Egypt. It was an exciting comeback win for Argentina. Egypt was leading by 2 points to nil in the 67th minute. Excuse me. But a late comeback saw Argentina score three goals including one from Messi, who continues to top up his prolific scoring record.
Of course. But look, that game between Colombia and Switzerland, how do we feel?
It might go down into overtime.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right. Okay then. All right. Let's head to Canberra because they've announced a budget support for Samoa. This is to help the country cope with rising fuel prices.
Yes, Australia has provided a $19.2 million in budget support to the government of Samoa to help ease pressure on public finances caused by rising fuel costs. Samoa Observer says Australian High Commissioner William Robinson acknowledged Samoa and other Pacific countries that they were feeling the effects of changes in the global fuel suppliers having problems there, and the pressure that's being caused by it on day-to-day living. And it comes just 2 months after Australia gave Fiji $30 million in targeted budget support.
Wow. Okay, look, I want to quickly jump to this story, though. Something unusual has happened in Tonga. I believe the kingdom has experienced its lowest temperature ever recorded. What is the temperature?
8.6 Celsius.
Wow. That's cold.
Yes. Very it recorded in Ewa early yesterday morning, and day before yesterday, Tonga Met says it's a new record, surpasses 88.7 degrees that was in 1994, and they say it's part of El Nino system.
Absolutely. Well, look, with all of that, we have got to wrap up, Whenau, but I appreciate you coming through. I know it's a little bit momoko, a little bit cold there in Tonga, but we appreciate you bringing our news wrap here on Pacific Beat.
Pacific Beat.
Now, Indonesian authorities have suspended all charter flight operations across West Papua following the killing of American pilot Nicholas Gosselin last week. Separatist group, the West Papua Liberation Army, has claimed responsibility, saying its fighters set fire to an aircraft operated by Indonesian airline PT-AMA in Balingama village. Benny Wender, though, the leader for Independence Group, the United Liberation Movement for West Papua, says he regrets the death, but Indonesia is responsible for using civilian pilots to fly military equipment.
For me, firstly, and on behalf of United Liberation Movement and people of West Papua, I regret that and sorry to hear the news, and I condolence to the family and the lost loved one. It is also wrong timing, wrong place. So because the West Papua Army or TPNPB spokesperson, Mr. Sebi Sambom, announced several times last few years this aircraft, all the pilots warning no flight this place, because this place is a war zone. And there is several aircraft suspicious from the military wing that the Indonesia using this aircraft supply all the equipment and even military themselves and all the things that Indonesia are supplying using all these aircraft. So it's not only AMI, but lot of company like Sushi Air and many companies run this aircraft. So already warning, but I think Indonesia reluctant to warning, remind all the pilot, don't fly this place because this is a war zone. But they still continue to allow this happen. So I think the Indonesia guilty to, you know, allow this happen. And for me, is I regret. And this place is already a war zone. For us, is, you know, it's really difficult to say how our struggle will be in the future, because Indonesia using this issue will be justify themselves, their presence in West Papua.
Like you've mentioned with the cases with the New Zealand pilot and now this American pilot, is that in a way sort of paint a negative light with your Free West Papua campaign?
Yes, I think it's under the international community might say, you know, we are killing the, you know, that's a little bit difficult, but we already declared that we are peacefully. We're not enemy. We did our friends like a pilot or any Western, any foreigner, that we are not enemy because we are peaceful. We defend our land, defend our, you know, our land and our people. And but because the Indonesia are should blame because they are there and they are occupied our country. That's why they drove the bomb and killing and thousands of killing West Papuans, almost 500,000 already been killed. That's why, you know, we are still struggle almost 60 years fight for our freedom. But because all these pilots are wrong time in wrong place, they should know they don't need to fly this area, but they still fly. But for me, it's really sorry and I also regret. And as you know, this killing take place. But at the same time, you know, we already take seriously. It shouldn't happen again in the future.
Would you also condemn the killing of this pilot as well?
Yes, I think I regret. That's what they put out a statement finished on my website. I regret, and this shouldn't happen, you know, in the future because we're not enemy with the you know, our sole friends and international friends like pilot or tourists or anybody.
Benny Wender, exiled West Papuan independence leader and chairman of the United Liberation Movement for West Papua, speaking to ABC's Hilda Wayne.
You're listening to Pacific Beat on ABC Radio Australia.
We head to sport now, where the rebuild of Fiji's national netball side will be put to the test over the coming days in Sydney, where the Pearls will compete in the inaugural Spirit Series alongside PNG, Singapore and Australia's First Nations team. As Richard Hewitt reports, Fiji's new coach, Michelle Parsons, started work in earnest just last month and will lead her new team on court for the first time today when they take on Singapore.
The Pearls' new coach oozes enthusiasm, and she says she feels confident in her new environment after several years working within South Auckland's Pacifica and Māori communities with New Zealand National League teams the Stars and the Comets. And from that experience comes an understanding of what the cultural side of the Spirit Series is all about, and what a privilege it is, she says, for Fiji to be invited.
Being Māori and understanding sometimes the Indigenous people or First Nations people do have to sometimes provide a different platform for that voice. So from my perspective, it's that celebration of our women who are those Indigenous or First Nations people.
Ali Tucker Munro is General Manager First Nations at Netball Australia, and she believes that all four competing teams in Sydney can relate to the spiritual side of the event.
We draw our strength and our identity from our culture and our community, so that also speaks to the spirit of our community and how powerful sport can be for many of us who are from the First Nations spaces. And I think it's also that real spirit of relating to country and what that means for each of you, wherever you're from, particularly for us here in Australia. It's really about how we draw that strength of spirit and pride as women in sport.
As the new coach at the helm in Fiji, there is inevitable pressure on Michelle Parsons to lift the national side up the world rankings. But she says there's also a job to be done at the grassroots.
We really are trying to look at the development across the whole nation. And I know that the world rankings being what they are, that we will be looking at our professional players. But these players coming to this tournament are all Fiji-based players.
You talked a few months ago about re-engaging with the talent pool. Is that what you feel you've done here? These players are not necessarily the finished product, but these are the future of netball in Fiji.
Absolutely. You know, these players need some investment and time, and this is that first part of the journey. But we are looking at the development over 4 years.
The whole Pearls squad will be assessed carefully in Sydney in terms of future potential, and each player will have an individual role to play in that process.
Yeah, the girls have got performance targets for each game. Then they'll all have individual targets that they'll be measured on. And then they write their own unit focus targets and prepare for the next game based on those performance outcomes. So not just having a, this is what I saw, but actually having measurable targets, I think, will help these girls see not just statistically where they are, but having those conversations within their groups and with the coaching group to be able to say, this is where we are, what's next?
and Fiji can expect some tough competition, not least from the Australian First Nations team, the Black Swans.
When the Black Swans team was formed a couple of years ago, it's almost like the girls go to a different gear because they know that they're not just representing themselves out on court. They're representing their community, they're representing their family, their mob. You look at somewhere like the Fiji rugby team, what they've been able to achieve on the international stage. So again, it just sort of speaks to how these spaces that are very culturally centred and culturally informed, the narratives around that are really powerful.
After the Spirit Series, the Fiji squad will go into the mix with players from outside the country during trials next month, which will decide the makeup of the team to compete in World Cup qualifying.
Expressions of interest have come in from players all across the world, which is really exciting, that players want to re-engage wherever they are playing in the world. But we also need to make sure that we're developing the game here locally, because you can't shift anything if you're not creating a larger player pool. I can't just rely on the players that are playing across New Zealand, Australia, the UK, USA on scholarships, or we've got some coming from Dubai and Malaysia. I want to be able to welcome players who are Fijian, wherever they're playing in the world, to trial, as well as growing our domestic base.
And in future, part of that process could involve Fiji hosting a Spirit Series.
Money is often an issue in terms of funding and sponsorship support, and that's why the Pacific Oz Challenge and Series opportunities, where the Australian Government and the Australian High Commission and Netball Australia have really invested in this space. So being able to pay that back, I think, is important. You know, where we could reach out to our Australian contacts and say, look, if there are any teams that are interested in a tournament series, that would be really open to hosting that.
And in the meantime, the Pearls will be hosting teams from Fijian associations based in Australia and New Zealand during the national trials next month, ahead of the Oceania World Cup qualifier in Tonga in September.
And that is Richard Hewitt reporting on the Netball Spirits series. Well, that literally brings us to the end of a Pacific Beat. Let's look back at one of our main stories, with Fiji's defence minister expressing his disappointment with Beijing's decision to greenlight a ballistic missile test in the Pacific Ocean after he advised the Chinese embassy in Suva against it.
You know, China is a big power. We're all a small, tiny nation. If you all have respect for each other and in our quest for peace, I'm sure, you know, incidents like this can be avoided.
We'll be back same time tomorrow, 6 a.m. PNG time, but tune in this afternoon at 5 p.m. PNG time. Up next, it's your news, and coming up after that, it's Nisha Daily. Until next time, this is Pacific Beat, yours in the Pacific.